Okay.
Should we start?
I'm already recording, so go straight ahead.
I just got the notification that you started. Also, I mean, it's fun to see you guys whilst we're recording this because we never see each other usually on the podcast. So, oh my God, no, I'm going to turn off my camera. I actually can't look at you. I'm going to turn it around one sec.
That's so rude. It's like
I know. Is it because we're so pretty?
It's because you're so pretty. But also, look, what did I say? I already forgot what I was going to say. Should I?
Yeah,
Okay, can you
you
say?
need to explain why we're like doing this.
Okay, just say one, two, three, start, and then I'll do it.
We've already started.
I know, but just say
I'm
it
not
one
gonna
more time.
cut anything.
But to everyone who's listening to us right now, this is our bonus episode, our first ever bonus episode. We haven't done this before, but we thought that it would be great to give you some more from us, some more information, some more of our background, some more of context about who we are and why we're doing what we're doing. So we are super excited to be doing this, and we are actually, Maxim and I, for once, it's not just going to be us talking, but actually more people from our team. So Solomia and Tatiana have joined us to share with you as well some of their stories, experiences, and thoughts about the topics that you were interested in. So thank you to everyone for submitting questions that you wanted us to discuss and know more about. And I think we can jump in straight away to answering them and having a conversation and also giving you a little bit of a kind of behind the scenes on our podcast and how we do things and how we organize things and plan things. So, yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely. I think it's a like a small love letter to our Patreon sponsors, and this is a bonus episode. It's our two tiers that get this bonus extra, and we're experimenting. So tell us if you like it, if you don't like it, if you want it longer, shorter. We would love to experiment and create more content that will live just on Patreon for our Patreon sponsors. And thank you so much once again for supporting us, because Ukrainian Spaces wouldn't exist for over a year without that support that it's growing. And if you love us, love the vibe, also bring a friend, subscribe them, share the subscription, whatever, that will help a lot. Okay, so how it's gonna work? We have some questions from our patrons, Patreon family. We also some have thoughts to share, and I think we can jump first to the questions and then see how it goes and what's the vibe, because again, we're doing it for the first time. Actually, remember, Valeria, we actually did the first episode of Ukrainian Spaces, and we felt so horribly about it because it was such a mess that we took it down, and it only exists as an a file on my computer.
I
And
know.
the second episode became the first episode officially as a podcast. So
Maybe one day for our like 50th anniversary, we'll release it as a platinum record. No, I don't even know what I'm saying. But
or
it's
I think
not.
if things like fall apart and we hate each other, we'll just cut each other out and release it like as a, as a revenge podcast episode.
Blackmail material.
Okay, so the first question we have is from our Patreon, part of our Patreon family, Christy Gabrielsen. And she wants to know a bit more about the Revolution of Dignity and the Maidan Revolution and how actually it has changed the direction of Ukraine's future and what did it mean for Ukraine's development in politics, culture, identity, and other areas. So this is a question that we don't so often get, actually, but we reference a lot.
I'm also super grateful for this question, but it's also kind of cool to explain to everyone how different ex our experiences and the experiences of different Ukrainians have been in relation to Revolution of Dignity. Because of course, there are stories that we know, stories that we don't know, but every single one of us will remember how it was like in those days. And have like specific feelings that we still have for the events and for what those events meant for Ukraine in general. So it's really cool we get to discuss it.
And I think we were remastering one of our episodes from the first season with Anastasia Lopatin, a young Ukrainian journalist. And she was remembering how she was 13 and the Maidan, and how a lot of things that she's seen and heard and experienced shaped her as a person.
So yes, that was a very lengthy way to say that it has definitely affected me and how I perceive Ukraine. And, you know, I remember being like 13 and proudly calling myself a nationalist, not even knowing all that is. I mean, and, you know, people laughing at me because obviously I had no idea what I was saying.
I think you did at 13, and experiencing through all of that still, you know, you probably have more awareness than a lot of people who have been watching yes. all of this from the outside.
Exactly. Like, to me, that just meant loving and defending your country. And to be honest, it still means that to me in our circumstance. But that should probably have a whole separate Twitter Spaces thing on yeah. that term specifically. But yeah, so, you know, for me, being Ukrainian always meant defending, and it always meant, you know, fighting for something. It didn't just mean enjoying the goodness of your country. It meant that, you know, there is always this kind of threat, and you always have to nurture your Ukrainianness and your freedom.
And I think when I was also remastering that, I had this realization that this is experience that probably each and every Ukrainian have, regardless of generation, of age, of background. That's kind of the moment that has changed us in a lot of ways and finally made us seeing ourselves from a completely different point of view, which, you know, I didn't have that language before. I couldn't say like, oh, you know, that and this decolonized me, or some, you know, some other language that I could use to describe. But that was exactly it. And I think Russians also saw that, a glimpse of like a future, a glimpse of the society that they tried to erase and destroy for centuries, and was still there, inspiring others in the region, inspiring other former colonies. And that's when it started. That's when genocide started. And that's when the invasion started, because they freaked out what they saw. And basically, you know, that's why every Ukrainian keeps reminding that this genocide didn't start on February 24th, 2022, but in 2014.
The guy who was standing right to him was shot in the head.
Sniper. It's pretty grim. You see patches of blood all over the place. Bit of what looks like skin, brain matter or something.
Well, most of the Baku soldiers taken from Crimea.
Russian areas.
Yes. There is a lot of propaganda there. They think that this is like some holy fight against Nazism. So they bring the police from there because they're afraid that police from here will be...
sympathetic.
Yes. Will not shoot the people.
When, the Revolution of Dignity happened, I was 38. What's really interesting is that I did not remember feeling that feeling even after 1991. When we got our independence, I was 15, and I was watching it all unfold. And it probably, as a teenager, you probably don't really take in what's happening if you're in the diaspora, because you kind of have to be there to really feel it. I feel, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I realized how significant this was, but it didn't feel like anything changed significantly until I saw 2014 build up, and I started working with Frontline, and I was doing translations from, I was watching it all unfold in front of me. And it was genuinely, for me, a watershed moment, because being in the diaspora, you feel a little bit disconnected as it is as a Ukrainian, because you're not Ukrainian enough sometimes, because you feel this kind of guilt that you're not actually there. You're kind of, you feel really far away. And for me, I think that was the thing that kind of went from, I don't know if this is going to make sense, but it went from an old school minded way of thinking about being Ukrainian to suddenly propelling us into this future that actually felt very different than what my parents kind of fought for. They kind of, you know, generations of stories that I've heard, like nothing ever changed, nothing ever changed. You keep fighting for your independence and your freedom, and you're running away from occupation and wars. And then suddenly this just felt very modern and very new. And now everybody's like my age and younger is rising up and saying, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. You're not good enough. We're holding our leaders accountable suddenly, which I think I'm surprised actually even then that the world didn't start paying attention then. And obviously I'm biased, but I just feel like that kind of really made a difference. And it changed how I thought of myself and the language that I started using about being Ukrainian, you know?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tatiana, for that as well.
I guess what I remember was happening, so it was late 2013, it was late November, December. I had just turned 17 that year. And it was the second year I was living in the U.S. here in New York and going to school. So I had started 11th grade. And I remember just, first of all, it was surreal. It was such a, it was kind of the same almost feelings like it was in 2022, where you were living a double life almost. You have to sort of live here in one way and then live your sort of private life in another way. But that was the first time I had ever experienced it. I remember I was living on Twitter. I had just started using Twitter at that time, and it was like that, the first time I experienced that digital activism where we were trying to get the world to pay attention, and no one was paying attention. It was insane. Like in 2022, where I was watching sort of live, these foreign journalists were in Kyiv, and you know the air alert sirens were in the background, and sort of there was like a lot of things going on. In 2013, 2014, nothing. It was like dead silence. And I remember reaching out to newspapers and radio stations and all these people, and like local and national and foreign, like outside of the US. And it was like banging my head against the wall, and just like, and people around me. And then in school, I remember we were, I think it was actually called government class, where it was the three of us. So me, Ukrainian, across from me was sitting a Polish kid who was born here to immigrant parents. And then by him, a guy, him and his parents are from Kazakhstan. And him and I had like an understanding of sort of what was happening, why this was happening. But then this Polish kid, which I don't know if, you know, his family or what they were like in this sort of Russian propaganda sphere, he was antagonizing me the entire time we were like in this class. We're basically like, oh, you don't know what's going on. This is a US coup. This is he was parroting. He's like, you are biased. That for like, this is when people started calling us Ukrainians biased. We cannot possibly know what is happening in our own country. We cannot possibly understand the global sort of globally what is going on, that there are larger actors and all of these things that we see all the time, like on the daily now, that, you know, all they're smart, they know what's happening, we don't. And so I just remember sort of going home and like watching, like live stream was on all the time, you know, on Maidan, and later I like remember watching like the funerals that started after, when, you know, people got killed, and it was just, it was a horrific time. At the same time that it was, you know, it was such an awakening for the Ukrainian nation, it was also like a really terrible time for a lot of people. And then you go outside of your building, of you know, your like family or community, and then you're faced with all these people that don't consider you human, which, you know, is still happening. But yeah, I just wanted to share that a lot of the things that we're experiencing currently, and not just us, for example, like Syrians also have experienced a lot of this. And I remember talking to a few of my friends when, you know, the Syrian revolution just happened. And I feel like a lot of people have this experience where they are so dehumanized by others who just don't, I don't know, if they lack empathy, if they just don't want to care, and so they would rather attack you and not, I don't even know how to describe that. And so that all started in 2014, 2013, where, you know, Crimea wasn't yours to begin with. This is not real. The green men aren't Russians. Russians are not in Eastern Ukraine. You're lying to yourselves. This is not happening. This is a civil war, blah, 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 all of that. And it just kept building. And that's why like 2022 was so explosive, not only literally, but figuratively too, because it was building for so long.
And I think like, you're right. Like, I think, I don't know, maybe it's my ignorance or something, but like the first time I heard Crimea is ours, which is like the popular Russian slogan, was in 2014. Like, as someone who was born in independent Ukraine, I was born in 1992. So a bit after Ukraine became independent, like, I never ever thought or spoke or knew or heard that Crimea was Russian, like this whole slogan, Crimea is ours. And so for me in 2014, I was like, whoa, where is this coming from? Maybe because my parents never thought that, so obviously I never was exposed to it. So for me, it was just like completely crazy that all of a sudden these random people are laying claim to something that I grew up with as part of my country, and they're doing it out of nowhere. So that's totally something that I understand myself. And yeah, I was in my last year of university when the Revolution of Dignity started. And for me, I guess I won't talk much about sort of the consequences, but for me, I actually grew up on Institutskaya Street, which is the street that everything kind of happened on, where the first shot, not the first shots, but a lot of people died on Institutskaya Street, which is like the main, not the main street, but it's a street that's parallel to the one that the parliament is on. And, you know, I've spent my whole childhood in that area. I used to go to the park that's just outside the parliament every single day of my life, go to Khrushchevsk and things like that. And to me, like, you know, all my childhood memories are connected with that place. And so I think for me, seeing back then the fact that, like, you know, people were dying on the street that all of my childhood is connected with was so insane. And I remember after the Revolution of Dignity, I remember my friends coming to visit me from the UK and from other places. And I always would take them, the first place I would take them to was the place on Institutskaya Street where I grew up, and where all the people, basically where loads of people were shot from the government buildings just outside. And so I think for me, that was the first time, because before, I think a lot of my feelings about Ukraine, I've always grown up in a very sort of proud Ukrainian family, even though we spoke Russian. So that's another topic of discussion that we've touched upon many times in our podcast. But for me, I never thought that it would get to the extent that people would start dying for our country, right? Like, I never thought that it would reach a point where people would be giving their lives to protect our kind of identity, protect our, not just identity, but as we spoke in many times before, sort of our country and our territory and our democracy, our freedom and all these things. And so it was the first time that that became part of everyone's vocabulary and everyone's like understanding of what it takes to protect ourselves. So I think for me, that was like the big change, that it wasn't just about, it wasn't just about kind of, I don't know how to, I'm trying to find the word. It's not pacifism. It wasn't just about like quietly protecting our identity, but it was about like doing everything possible to push back the Russian influence, like even giving your life. A lot of people did give their life. So that, I think, was the psychological kind of shift in my head.
I love how these stories, and we started like, they're making bit by bit from different angle, they make together a puzzle. And the puzzle with the powerful message that with when any genocide starts or any like fascist erasure starts, there are always these tendencies to erase the voices, to gaslight them, to, you know, attack, and people do not speak up and people do not stand up for us. And we're just, you know, one by one, we're taking apart in that way. And then when 2014 started, Ukrainians stood up for themselves, but it wasn't enough to stop this massive genocidal nuclear arms empire. But it took another, like this slow burning genocide and invasion, and it took much more lives when finally, at this point, people started standing up for us, sending arms, you know, supporting us. And I think I wish it happened before. And I wish we all were, like I personally was more vocal to highlight why it's happening, that it's a bigger picture. So it didn't take us 8 years of the war, tens of thousands of lost lives, and now a genocide. So basically keep saying what we were saying back in the beginning, but maybe not.
It's not because of who's the leader. So Zelensky isn't like, again, this godlike figure. But I think what's interesting is that when we were talking about the Zelensky effect, that book, and how he was formed kind of as a result of this united, vocal, young, modern, you know, crowd of Ukrainians that are really sensitive to how they want their country to be and how they want to live their lives. I think had it not been a series of events that led him to use his platform and his way of engaging with an audience, I think we may be in a different place. I think it's, you know, I'm not putting him on a pedestal, but I think that it took from 2014 this wave of, you know, Ukrainians to then kind of form the leader that they wanted in a way, even though a lot of people didn't vote for him, all of that, you know, all of that. But the way he's engaging a worldwide audience for the cause and what we want as Ukrainians and what we want the future to be, and how he's using that message and using his platform to deliver that message, it's the perfect storm of why this is now a watershed moment, I think. Yeah. You know,
I think what you said though is really important also to highlight that, yes, of course, it was like an insane leap. And I think also Revolution of Dignity is what separated us from Russia in a way that nothing else has before. Like, I think we need to acknowledge that. I think that was like the point in which we accepted that that's not the way forward that we want, because Orange Revolution was more about kind of, yes, it was about that, but it was more about sort of election fraud and kind of democracy and things like that, whereas this was like a clear-cut, you know, fuck you, Russia, we don't want to go there anymore. But I think what we need to acknowledge, and I also acknowledge all the time, I don't think we've ever done this on the podcast, but like, I didn't start speaking Ukrainian after the Revolution of Dignity. I wasn't forced, not forced, I feel very different now than I did back then. Obviously, the full-scale invasion is different and not comparable, but I think it was the first, why I'm saying that, you know, the Revolution of Dignity didn't like take us and like change us the way that this has, is because it just shows that we have been going through like a process. It's not a slow process, it's a fast process, because we can look at other countries in the region who are all like, you know, in a way trying as well, but the process is a bit slower. For us, it was a fast process. But it was still a process. And that's what I think I really want people who might not know as much in, about the Revolution of Dignity and just in general about the recent years in Ukraine to understand that, like, we have also been going through this gradual kind of process of decolonizing ourselves. And some events have helped that, but it wasn't so straightforward and easy as well. And I think that's okay and that's good. And that's what makes our history and our story so interesting and important for others as well.
I think if everybody listened, like, watched the movies about the Maidan Revolution, like documentaries, read the books, because there's like plenty of like good stuff out there, nobody would be surprised what happened after 24th, because on the smaller scale that has happened on Maidan Square, like, people stood up. And Valeria is right, because that was a watershed moment for me personally as well, because when the first time I saw 1 million people on the streets coming in defense of a group of 30 young students, I understood, like, this is a watershed moment. And, you know, now we bring all the time in beefs with Russians online who are saying, like, what can we do, you know? We cannot protest. It doesn't matter. There are like two less of us. When we saw that there's 1 million people easily can stood up for 30 young students, after that, it felt like nothing impossible. Like, we stand for each other. We're responsible for each other, and we can do shit and we can change shit because of that. And I think a lot of people understood, like, but yeah, Valeria, like, probably wouldn't, it didn't, I regret that didn't hit hard enough for me, because I remember that people who then became first refugees, Preselenci from Donbass, from Crimea, and they came to Kyiv, and we like were chatting, and I remember each and every of them would say, like, we should fight back and we should drive them away and we should liberate our territories because they will come for us here. And everyone was like, you know, trying to normalize stuff because Maidan was traumatic enough. And everyone's like, oh yeah, let's just build a wall, whatever, and move on with our lives. And we would try to normalize it, at least some of us. I didn't, like, you know, also switch to Ukrainian or anything like that. And they were right and we were wrong. And I think, unfortunately, as I feel it, it was important time to kind of think and slowly decolonize ourselves. But maybe it was also a bit of wasted time because we could have done it earlier and realized it as a society as well, that this is what it take to end all of this, to kick them out from the last inch of our territory.
What's really interesting is that I think, you know how the world sometimes views massive events as these overnight things that happen? It's so interesting for people to really understand. And I think if people understood that these seeds have been planted for such a long time, that I think they would, if they had that knowledge, I think they would approach everything that they say, foreign audiences especially, they would approach things in a very different way. They would say things differently. It would be a much more mindful, oh yeah, we totally get why this is happening, you know. And I have a friend, Valery, he's from Kyiv, and I've been friends with him for years. I met him in London, and he would always wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to the gym and work out for 2 hours. He'd go swimming and lifting, and then after work he'd go back to the gym. And I would always ask him, Valery, like, what, why? And he said, I'm Ukrainian, I always have to be ready, we are Ukraine, you know. And it was like this I just went, oh, obviously it's built in us to be ready. So all of these seeds have been a slow burn. So I love that you said that, Maxim. It's such a good point.
I actually want to build on that. I recently heard a history teacher talk about this, where she was saying that how we view, I think someone was asking her a question about revolutions, and she said that how we view revolutions, or how we think about them, is how we see them in history books, right? There was this one moment, maybe this was like one protest or one thing that sort of erupted and everything changed, because we spend so little time in history books and history classes learning about, you know, there's maybe like a day or two where you have on this like massive event that changed everything. So in our minds, we think of like a revolution, of something that changes really the course of a country's history or of people or anything like that, as something that has to happen, that's like a massive, massive event, when in reality, like Tatiana said, and like Valeria, it builds, right? It happens, something small that you might not realize that already happened, it like already started that revolution, and it just keeps going, right? It might be like months and years in between, but all of these little things, they build and build and build. And I think, you know, we have in Ukraine, we always talk about how, you know, there's been two or three revolutions, but then you can also say that all of these things have been like one massive revolution, because it was sort of we were fighting the same enemy, the same aggressor, right? And it was like these things building upon each other, and yeah, it's just, I think it's just really interesting how it, once we are living through it, living through revolutions and wars and things like that, it changes our perception of how we used to think of something and then how it is in reality.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think that what a lot of Ukrainians, I don't know if Ukrainians realize this or not, but for me, one of the most powerful things was when I was talking to a friend of mine from Hong Kong, when Hong Kong was going through all of these protests and mass waves of sort of, I guess, mobilization of just ordinary people that were against the Chinese, the CCP, and for democracy in Hong Kong. The Revolution of Dignity in Ukraine was a big deal for them. Like, they remembered it, they knew it, they watched the movies about it, documentaries, they listened to the activists from it. Like, the Revolution of Dignity was a big deal for the protest movement in Hong Kong. And I think that's something that we underestimate. But I think it's just so powerful that all these protest movements that represent freedom and represent democracy and fight against oppression and fight against, you know, oppressive regimes, that they feel for each other and that there's solidarity between us. And I think that's something that we need to appreciate more as Ukrainians going forward, because I think that's something that will make us all stronger together. And it's not just Hong Kong, it's so many different kind of, you know, people and places, and it's just this feeling of fighting against something that you know isn't right, and like standing up for your values. So I think it's just so important to keep that in mind, that the Revolution of Dignity, yes, it was important for Ukraine, but it was also important for people around the world. That is it from us on this question. We thought we'd get through a couple of questions, but we realize how amazing this question was, and we're going to keep to one question probably per bonus episode. So please don't forget to leave your questions as well for us, that we can tackle next time, as Solomia, Tatiana, Maxim, and Valeria. And also, I think Maxim just reminded me, to remind everyone to bring a friend to Patreon, because it's so much more exciting to have a community of diverse people with us, listening to us and learning all together. So thank you so much, everyone. And
yeah, and have all the feedback possible, because we're experimenting. So if it's too long, if it's too short, if it's like boring, if it's not boring, just, you know, we're part of a whole family Patreon. Leave your honest feedback right away in the comments, and we're gonna make it as perfect as possible for you, following your wishes.
Yes. And praise from all.
Slava Ukraini. Slava Ukraini.
Героям слава.